906 have some Flames news this morning. Well, not really. I mean, it should be Flames news. Hey, Riley, have you seen who's nominated for the Norris Trophy?
I have not.
Yeah. Well, Victor Hedman, he's nominated. Cale Makar, Calgary boy, he's nominated. And the other finalist per the NHL, Adam Fox.
Oh.
Enjoy your Wednesday. 9:06, let's change the topic and talk some golf. It's Luke Elvey joining us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Takeout, delivery, when you're tired of cooking, give him a call, 403-248-3344. Mr. Elvey, where do we find you and describe what you're seeing, please?
Mr. Pender, good morning to you. I am in the Palmetto State, the low country of South Carolina, and I'm at the glorious Congaree Golf Club, which a lot of people are going to know a lot more about after the next 4 days as we enjoy this Palmetto Championship, which is replacing, for this year only, the RBC Canadian Open in the schedule.
I've seen some photos of this golf course pop up in the last 24 hours. It is mind-numbing what has been built here. This is like in a forest, but yet every hole is surrounded by what appears to be sand dunes. Like, try to describe to us what you're seeing. This is special.
It's very special. It was built by Tom Fazio in 2017. Fazio, one of the great architects over the last 20-plus years. It was founded by a couple of business magnates, Dan Friedkin and the late Bob McNair, who many people might know as the Houston Texans owner,
sure.
Or one of them. Yeah. Look, this golf course has already debuted at number 39 in America's top 100 golf courses. Now, America has most of the best courses in the world, and it's already inside the top 40. That's how good it is. It's built on sand, and anyone who loves their golf course architecture knows that the best golf courses in the world are either built by the ocean or built on sand. And the reason why that makes it so good is the drainage is phenomenal. You get hard, firm surfaces. The balls roll a long way, and you get that lovely wasteland look of a lot of bunkering and sand that is just difficult to play out of. It causes havoc for a lot of people, but it makes it look visually spectacular. And there has been a lot of parallels made to the Melbourne Sandbelt, which is obviously dear to my heart, being an Australian and one of the great golf destinations on earth because of, again, just everything's built on sand.
Please tell us about the Melbourne Sandbelt. I quite enjoyed Melbourne when I was there a year and change ago. I want to go back. Tell me about these belts I need.
Yeah, right. It's a famous region that describes a group of, let's say, 10 of the best courses in Australia and many of them in the world's top 100. And look, yeah, you don't wear it. You're just playing them and you have a great time in playing on them. Royal Melbourne, Kingston Heath, Victoria, Metropolitan. I could go on and on. Peninsula, Kingswood. It's just a sublime golf experience. So when these borders open up and travel is a normal thing again, get on a plane, fly to Melbourne, Australia, and go and experience that golf because it is, honestly, it's second to none. But this week, this golf course, Congaree, is going to capture a lot of people's hearts.
It's the week before the U.S. Open. The golf course is spectacular. I'm not sure I can say the same thing about the field. What's the strategy most of the big names have been taking a week ahead of the major?
Well, it's a busy schedule, Ryan, isn't it? I mean, we talked about this for the last, since the Masters, basically. It's a hectic schedule. They're trying to jam everything in to make it work. And, the players have got to have some break. You've just come off the Memorial, 120 players, invitational event, best in the world all come together. This week, you would have had a lot of the RBC ambassadors for the Canadian Open playing. Dustin Johnson's obviously won. He's in the field this week also because he's a South Carolina boy. Brooks Koepka's in the field this week. You'll see a number of, strong Europeans that are playing, the likes of Tyrrell Hatton, Matty Fitzpatrick, Tommy Fleetwood, Ian Poulter, a lot of Ryder Cup players that are trying to push for their position. And then you've got the Southeast boys. This is their local tournament, if you will. The likes of Harris English, Patton Kaziah, JT Poston, Keith Mitchell, all of these people have an attachment to this area and this golf region, Harold Varner III, and that's why they're here in the field this week. But, yep, it drops away pretty quickly And the reason for that is everyone is just trying to catch 1 week of breath before they get into the US Open, then the Travelers Championship the following week. Then they're going to fly over to Europe to get into the, you know, big events there of the Scottish Open, the Irish Open, the Open Championship. It's just, it's so much golf right in the heart of the season.
So I guess the question I have, this is the second year in a row that the Canadian Open's been canceled. The first one made a whole lot of sense with the pandemic. It'd be a lot more frustrating now given how open many parts of the world are and yet how closed it remains here. That is what it is. But how does a tournament get thrown together on short notice and put together, you know, the $7+ million purse? This isn't easy to do. I know there's lots of people that would love to host a tournament, but there's not exactly a ton of notice when a pandemic hits. Can you give us a little backstory on how this became the filler for the Canadian Open Week?
Well, I certainly can. This venue was built specifically for two reasons. One, to provide people who are underprivileged or don't have the resources, who are very good golfers at a high school level, the opportunity to make it into college. So wealthy benefactors don't become members of this golf course. They become ambassadors. So they don't have to pay a lot of dues to be a member here, but their job is to mentor people of less wealth or social economic standing the opportunity to make it into college. So they fly these people in. They get them to stay a week. They put them through a full program of, you know, college life. The golf world, how you travel, how you look after yourself, all these things that set them up for life in a golf career because their talent suggests they could make it. And that's brilliant. The other reason why it was built was to host professional tournaments. Now, it narrowly lost out on the 2025 President's Cup to TPC Harding Park on hosting that. But once the RBC Canadian Open made the very difficult decision, I can only imagine how hard it was for Golf Canada and everyone at RBC, everyone involved with that tournament to go, you know what? It's just too hard again this summer. Because right now, could they host it? Yeah, they could. Absolutely, they could. But it was just, there was too much uncertainty to put it on the table to do it because you couldn't pull off to the best of your ability. And if you can't run a national open to the best of your ability, well, I think you end up tarnishing the brand. So it ended up being a smart decision at the time, but a difficult one to postpone. Next year, the RBC Canadian Open will be back, bigger than ever. Golf is flourishing in Canada. You know, everyone in the game in Canada is psyched about how good the game's going. But they were just fortunate, and I say they being the PGA Tour, that the Palmetto Golf Club and its wealthy benefactors were ready to host an event at a drop of a hat and have the resources to do that. And that's why it's on this week.
What are you looking for in terms of play and form as we, again, are 1 week away from Torrey Pines?
There are a lot of really informed players right now playing in this field. Brant Snedeker has picked up his game. He's a two-time winner at Torrey Pines. You've got Patton Kizzire, who's on an absolute heater, but no one really talks about. This guy blew them away in the Korn Ferry Tour like 5 years ago. And when he gets onto the PGA Tour, yeah, he had a win a couple of years back, 2018, the Sony Open. Nice event, whatever. But just went away from doing what he was doing best, which is he's a phenomenal putter. So he just went back to the skills and drills, and he's returning to playing nicely. I'm really looking forward to seeing how this golf course plays. The ball on the ground, and Ryan, you and I both know this, the ball's round for a reason. It was meant to roll. But in North American golf, and I say that because Canadians, we're all in the same boat in that respect, is the ball flies through the air a lot and hits and stops. But the game was, you know, made in the Lynx lands of Scotland where the ball rolls. Wind is a massive factor. And here you're going to see the ball roll a lot. No rough, lots of fall away off greens, sandy waste areas, sandbelt style bunkers. The ball will roll. So length, even though the course is over 6,700 yards at par 71, which is, again, enormous, it won't be the big factor this week. It'll be accuracy on approach and the ability to get the ball in the hole when you do get yourself out of position. So I really like Tyrrell Hatton from England for that very reason. I also like Patton Kizzire this week for that very reason. Get the people that have the ability to get the ball in the hole, not hit it the furthest, because length isn't the be-all and end-all this week.
Looking to next week, four Canadians will be in the field. That's significant because it just kind of feels normal to have four Canadians in a major now. That's a huge development over the last decade or so. Of course, Corey Connors, the cash machine that's been just putting up top 20 seemingly every week and has performed very well at the majors this year. Also, you have Adam Hadwin and Taylor Pendrith qualifying. Those two won their big qualifying days, which are 36 holes, I believe, back on Monday or Tuesday, which is a wild event to get in.
Yeah.
And then I think Mackenzie Hughes is already in on merit. Maybe just talk about that group or even just the qualifying process, because it's not normal. If you start with the starting number of golfers, the U.S. Open's got to be the biggest, widest cast net in golf.
Over 1,000 people try and qualify for it, right? It's ridiculous. So if you've got a handicap of like 0.3, say, you can go and pay money to go to a qualifying event, and they call it, you know, local qualifying, and then if you get through that, which usually they take about 5 players out of 150 at a site, and then they go into what we call sectional qualifying, which is what the Golf Channel used to quote as golf's longest day. And they go into a grueling 36-hole qualifier on a Monday, and they just play flat out trying to make it. And it depends on the caliber of players at the site, on how many spots are available. At some sites, you can literally only have 2 spots up for grabs because they're not great players. But other sites, because all the PGA Tour pros are there, you can have 15 spots up for grabs. But imagine, you know, and if you're not in the top 60 in the world, you're not in the US Open. So people who are world-class players have to go through this process of qualifying for this tournament, or this Open, this championship, right? So it's such a cool thing that allows people to do what Taylor Pendrith has done, Adam Hadwin, and a number of other players. They get their chance to live the dream. And that's what makes, to me, in my opinion, the US Open, you know, quite unique and special in its own right. The Open Championship has a similar kind of vibe about it, but not as much as the US Open. Honestly, people, you know, does a +3 handicap make it to the US Open? No, they don't. Very rarely does anyone of that caliber make it to a major. But it gives them the hope that they can. And that's why it's cool.
Okay, 30 seconds or less on Ricky Fowler. He did not make the cut. He will not participate in the US Open, and his star continues to sink.
Well, he's actually starting to catch form. Obviously, this is all because of his trip dropped out of the top, you know, inner sanctum of world golf, top 50, top 60 in the world. He's now outside the top 100. But we've seen in the last, let's say, 3 events, signs that his putting's coming back, which is bleeding confidence back into his long game. I think that this year will be a year that Ricky's had to sit out majors, but he will be back in a big way very shortly.
Always great. We will look forward to chatting with you next week to tee up the season's third major. Thank you, Luke.
Looking forward to it, Ryan. Enjoy golf week if you get some in.
Yeah, would love to. Planning on it. Thank you, sir. There's Luke Alvey from South Carolina setting up Congaree, which is a wild golf course. I just tweeted out a photo of it. It's mind-blowing. It looks like something from space. So go look at it. It's in the middle of a forest, and all the holes are surrounded by sand. So some things happening there that are one of a kind. 9:19, we'll come back. A little baseball chat with Ben Wagner. A Pinder report on the way as well. It's all here on The Nine, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Back to The Nine with Ryan Pinder, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Pinder report coming up. We've got an update from our national men's soccer team with a big win against Suriname yesterday. It is not a you're in. It's just one of the many steps they had to take along the way to get to a World Cup in Qatar, and they decisively made it. 4-0, not close. Not close at all. Right now, though, we'll talk a little baseball. We pleased to be joined every Wednesday by Ben Wagner of the Blue Jays broadcast team. Last night's loss, a painful one, and it was promising for so long with Robbie Ray looking almost unhittable, just one earned run, 17 strikeouts through 6 1/3, but it was getting obvious as the game extended that the Jays were getting into trouble, Ben.
Well, I mean, it became an unwinnable game when C.J. Edwards came into the ballgame, right? But you had to get multiple innings of relief because of the tie game situation with Trent Thornton. And Trent Thornton wasn't as good as Trent Thornton has been for Charlie Montoyo. But that's the situation. You couldn't burn Castro. You're not going to burn Jordan Romano in that position. And you can't touch Tyler Chatwood for whatever reason right now. I mean, the guy's just completely fallen off a cliff in his last five outings. And you have to keep it a tight ball game. So you go with the guy that, in that situation, after it became a tie game, you got to go with Trent Thornton and see if you can get a couple of innings and see if your offense can show any sign of life on the south side. And that, to me, is the bigger issue. But Charlie was trying to maneuver his bullpen into where he could salvage it for not ruining the next two nights at the same time.
Yeah, and this is the part, because if they're fully healthy, I don't even know if Castro's on this team. And now you're like, oh, boy, we got to save him because we might need him tomorrow and we're not winning. We're just tied. I mean, that's the state of affairs. But you're right. 1-for-12 with runners in scoring position, that's really how you got there more than the bullpen screwing it up. Now, they still could have screwed it up, but you should have had a lead before they screwed it up.
You should have had a much bigger cushion than that. And even if you were wanting to throw Rafael Dolis, he just didn't have his good stuff last night, right? He threw more fastballs last night than I was aware of. Looking at the chart, and his fastball command is where it was letting him down. You know, he leaned on the slider. He threw a couple of splitters. But for the most part, fastball command was his demise. And we know if he doesn't have fastball command, we've watched it now for a year plus, that's when it becomes very troublesome for Rafael Dolis. And he's an impact arm. You mentioned Anthony Castro. Does he even crack this roster if it wasn't for the injuries? And the injuries is where this story needs to start with the Blue Jays bullpen. There are not only just six guys that are on the injured list, there are six guys with impact, high leverage opportunities on the injured list for the Blue Jays right now. That changes a lot if you get half of those guys back. If you get Julian Merriweather, Ryan Barucki, and choose who else comes back off of this injured list situation. This is a much different scenario for the Blue Jays and how they orchestrate any game, let alone tight ball games.
Well, and that's the sad part, because you look at the standings, they're two games over, and you can think of four right off the top of your head in the last 3 weeks that the bullpen's gift-wrapped and given away. The game in Cleveland was a nightmare. The first of three meltdowns from Chatwood. Give us some good news. Who's coming? Who's healthy? Who's rehabbing that's close?
Yeah, Travis Bergen should be on the return. A.J. Cole is somebody that in the last year plus has pitched himself into pretty high standing with the Blue Jays in their pitching department. P. Walker, I know Matt Bushman really likes him, and Charlie has leaned on him more and more since he's come back. So Travis, if there is a light at the end of the tunnel, two guys in Travis Bergen, the lefty, A.J. Cole, the veteran right-hander, are closer to returning than anybody else. Ryan Barucki should start to throw by the time this week is over. That's a good sign that he's on the return track. And maybe Julian Merriweather, whose 60-day allotment on the injured list will expire, and they hope to get him back on the mound sometime in Dunedin. But that's going to be a much longer road for Julian Merriweather, who is unbelievable at the start of this year. Fans remember those first 3 weeks in April. But there is good news. There's some hope on the horizon for the bullpen.
Well, and then what are the other options that you'd weigh? I mean, obviously, trades at this time of year are very rare. We did see the Rays do it, but they had to give up a starting shortstop to get two relievers. I don't know that that's not something that happens in July. But then the other option would be, okay, who are your starters at the lower levels or prospects that you could pull up and put into high leverage? Like, I don't know that we're there yet with Nate Pearson, but apparently Patrick Murphy's working. Where's Thomas Hatch? Like, are those guys that you'd put in high leverage, or does that not suit their skill set?
Patrick Murphy for me is a little bit of a wild card, right? And he, the way that I understand it, the way you look at the games that he's pitched in, and he's pitched well at AAA, especially with this new challenge. You know, you go from A ball to AAA and you try to get some big time reps. If he is healthy, they would like to have him come to the major leagues without any restrictions. How do you make sure that his health is okay without, you know, really testing him at the big league level? That's going to be the next big step. Patrick Murphy is a little bit of a wild card because he's got tremendous stuff. They're not going to stretch him out. They're not going to tinker with him at this situation and be a starter. I would imagine they need to get him a back-to-back in AAA before they even think about getting him to the major leagues. Thomas Hatch, though, is another guy that they want to jump into this rotation. And that is a big step for the Blue Jays. I thought without the setback, Thomas Hatch would beat Alec Manoah to the major leagues. But then he had the setback. They shut him down for a couple of weeks. And now he's kind of pitching himself back into the conversation at AAA. So there is good news. Unfortunately, none of the good news is immediate news. None of the answers arrived today. So if you're talking about going out and seeking outside opportunities, it's going to be very tough and it's going to be very costly for the organization to facilitate any trade, you know, midline reliever, high leverage reliever, or starter. And in my opinion, the bigger need here is in the long game where the Blue Jays are. Once we get into July post All-Star break, can they go out? Can they find somebody to lop into this rotation? Because this rotation, when they're pitching well, pitches you into a position where you can win a ball game.
Ben Wagner, our guest, Blue Jays broadcast crew here on Sportsnet. I wanted to ask you about Robbie Ray. You know he's on when you immediately know just by the tight pants. But in all seriousness,
been on all year.
He's been. I don't know what my expectations were. They were not high enough, I guess, because he really has given them some solid work. He was terrific again last night.
May I pump the tires? Because I've been on the Robbie Ray train all spring.
Yeah.
All season. I've been a big fan of Robbie Ray, and even going back to the end of 2020, where you saw some flashes of the unfortunate, you know, Robbie Ray-isms and the, you know, the wild walk totals and the high pitch count early in ball games, even after the trade when he was acquired for the Blue Jays. But he and P. Walker hit it off, and they found something, and Robbie Ray realized it very early, and that's another reason why he signed so early in free agency. And now we are seeing the dominant stuff. There are nights where Robbie Ray can just go out and he can throw fastballs and sliders and let the natural movement, the natural ability of him to throw a baseball and the baseball dance off his fingertips and get results. And last night was one of those nights where it's fastball-slider combination, and his slider the last two times out has been at an elite level. He threw more of them than he'd ever thrown in a major league game his last time out, equal to that in terms of the splits, plus the gaudy strikeout totals last night in Chicago, which is a really good lineup, by the way. The Chicago White Sox have a really good lineup, and Robbie Ray was just carving them up and doing so with power, with the fastball and the slider combination. That's an unfortunate loss for the Blue Jays to have, because you waste performance for Robbie Ray.
We've seen some cool moments. It's one of the things you get romantic about baseball, as they say. We saw Alec Manoah, his mom, a couple weeks ago with the first start and the first strikeout and that. And then for Riley Adams last night, getting a taste and seeing his family. What are his thoughts on this kid?
Riley Adams is somebody that I thought, you know, would make an appearance at some point this season if the Blue Jays, just depending on how the Blue Jays wanted to handle their catching core, you know, there was some pocket of time that they were looking to bring in a veteran to back up Danny Jansen and help with the pitching staff. And then Alejandro Kirk won himself the job. But now with the injury situation and the Blue Jays with five guys on their 40-man roster in a backstop scenario, go to Riley Adams, maybe a little ahead of schedule. And it's a swing that has been evolving, which is the good news, because in spring training, it was a very slow bat. He had a bigger uppercut, and to his credit, he used the alternate training site through the beginning of April and then shifting to get into May at AAA when he started to get some really good reps. He's driving the ball much better. And that ball that he hit last night in Chicago, that's a seed, and that's kind of the exit velocity and the trajectory that we've been hearing about Riley Adams. And let's not shortchange him either. He called a great game for a very difficult guy to catch. And it was a tight ball game to its very late stages in his major league debut. If that guy gets out of bed before noon today, I'd be stunned just because of the mental grind of what his major league debut was last night.
No kidding.
And you know what? It's the great thing about baseball is that the next day is another day. And now we're excited to see Manoah one more time. What's your expectation here? I had the great start and then, you know, bad in two, second start. It's great to have young studs. I mean, Vladdy's doing his thing. It's a very exciting team right now, and now Manoah falls in. Where What's your expectation for him? Now, Lynn on the other side, he's been pretty good too. But like you say, this this is a good White Sox. This is a good order that Manoah is going to be up against today.
Yeah, the White Sox are a really good team. I mean, the back end of the bullpen is outstanding. Their starting pitching, for the most part, has been outstanding. And unfortunately for the Blue Jays, between Rodon, Lance Lynn, and Dallas Keuchel tomorrow, they're going to get, you know, the best three, essentially, in their rotation right now. And Lance Lynn, here in the middle of it, has been really good. Alek Manoah needs to just be a little bit better. Maybe not as electric as what his debut was, but his stuff was flat his last time out. His fastball didn't have life. The slider command was really not that great. And he had a big dip in velocity his second start. And this is something that we were watching pretty closely when he was at AAA, is this inconsistency. But remember what got Alek Manoah to the major leagues, and that was a need for the Blue Jays to cover innings. More than anything, they had to get him in New York. He was already stretched out. They had no other options, and this is another reason why I thought Thomas Hatch, before the setback, would beat Manoah to the big leagues. They need somebody to go out there and consistently cover innings and fight. And Alek Manoah, whether his stuff is flat or if it's electric, he's going to go out there and battle, and he's not going to shy away. That's just his moxie when he's on the mound. And I expect the same. And I expect the realization that sometimes you're just not going to have the A stuff like you did in your debut. So there are going to be starts where you're going to have to figure it out. And that's what a bonus week in the big leagues will do for anybody, and understand and get that book a little thicker. And you watch him. Watch the TV cutaways. Alek Manoah is like studying everything. It doesn't matter if Bo is in the batter's box or Robbie Ray is out on the mound, you know, grunting away. Alek Manoah is like sponging every moment of this major league life that he's in right now. He's fascinating to watch from afar.
So you mentioned Bo, just as an example, someone hitting. How would you characterize his season? Because Vladdy's had this massive breakout. It looks like Semien's been a brilliant signing, and maybe they can find a way to keep him around with more term, be it a one-year qualifying offer or a deal. But Bo has been hitting two all year. When Springer gets back, I don't know that he will, and I don't know that he's had a great season. He hasn't been bad, but we've seen him a lot better than this, haven't we?
We have. We've seen him more consistent. He's not bad. I wouldn't classify Bo as being in the bad category. I would just classify Bo right now as being in an inconsistent category. He has admitted, you know, that he's finding himself mechanically a lot at the plate right now. He doesn't feel comfortable when he's in the batter's box. And I thought earlier in the season, his offensive woes and some of the dips and even further down valleys, with that was because he was struggling defensively, you know, but he's been pretty decent the last 4 or 5 weeks in the field defensively, but the bat just hasn't come around. And I think he's going to be one of those guys that will hit his way out and swing his way out of whatever this funk is that he's feeling at the plate. And then the Blue Jays are going to benefit this. I still think that he'll stay in that number two spot, by the way, if Springer ever comes back. I think that Semien could slot down, and then you have an even deeper lineup. If you get Marcus in that 5 or 6 spot, and then you get a punch of Hernandez, Grichuk, or Semien, Grichuk, and, you know, fill the 8 and the 9 slot in, and then kind of this rotation in 7, depending on who has to DH. But that's kind of my make out of this lineup, because I don't think you're going to help Bo, or you're going to help the team, honestly, if you move him down in the order.
Well, be ready tonight, because they might need you.
Are you righty? We need to know this. Like, righty, lefty?
Be loose.
I've got my power and my A stuff.
Yeah.
Spider tack with the right hand.
Yeah, I need you to prepare today as if you're going in, so be ready.
Seriously.
I'm ready. This is why we do the reps.
That's right.
At 7 o'clock Eastern.
For moments.
I heard you were touching
like
65 the other day. Is that right?
That's the speed of my golf cart.
Good to talk to you, man. Be good.
Always great to chat.
There is Ben Wagner on the Blue Jays broadcast team from the Palatial Estate in Dunedin, Florida. He's got to figure it out, Riley, that guy from the Midwest. And, you know, lived in Buffalo for a while, coming up the play-by-play ranks, set a condo in Toronto, and then said, you know what, why not just make home base in Dunedin? There's a single A team here when I'm gone. wife can work remotely, and we'll come to Toronto in season and hang out in Florida all winter. That's a move. Just zips around his golf cart all day, hammering margaritas, or so I'd like to believe I would do. Hmm.
That sounds like a good plan.
Oh, yeah. One day we'll be back, Riley. One day. Am I too old to make it as a ball player? Turn 40 in the fall?
I mean, anything's possible.
Yeah, I don't think that is. I think I am too old. Anyway, maybe that's just my negativity.
The 9 with Ryan Pinder continues on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
9:40, Rintoul and Sermon coming up at 10 o'clock. Tonight, Blue Jays baseball on your radio. The kid, Alek Manoah, the unit, the big bruiser. He's throwing heaters inside on the White Sox. Good lineup. Lance Lynn on the other side. Little preview of that, recapping last night. It's all ahead in the Pinder Report. But reminder, all our broadcasts do come to you live from the Iconic Studio in downtown Calgary, powered by Iconic Electric and Controls. Telecommunications, it's Iconic. Contact them today at iconicec.ca. Here it is. Stanley Cup field is down to 6 teams. It could be down to 5 tonight. The Jays need a slight tweak of their entire bullpen. Our men's national soccer team a step closer to qualifying for the World Cup in Qatar next year. And we have a stave-tastic matchup on Long Island tonight. It's all ahead in the Pinder Report, Dean. Let's hit it with the NHL. Game 5, Canes, Lightning, Carolina trying to stave. Tough go for the Stavers of late. Scoreless after 20. Dean, if you like pretty goals, just keep giving the Lightning power plays. They'll do it for you, and the Canes did it in the second.
Here's a chance for Killorn coming in. Killorn over point. Had to go to the backhand. He scores! A power play goal by Braden Point. And Tampa has a 1-0 lead.
Just a gorgeous finish as he cuts in, fakes forehand right shot, turns to the backhand, and immediately tucks it in top shelf. That's 21 goals and 21 assists in his last 31 playoff games.
He has been he's underpaid. You could be paying him 2-3 times what he's being paid, and he would still be a value, because this is the best. You see, he's tied this year for the cup lead, the lead in goals. You mentioned last year, the game-winning goals, series-clinching goals.
There was a strong case to be made that despite Hedman winning the Conn Smythe, that it could or should have been Point. And yes, there was. You need lots of good players to win the cup, but he was that good. You could have been convinced he was snubbed.
And I don't think it's a situation where Braden Point is excelling because there's other skilled guys that the other team has to focus on.
He's the straw man.
It's amazing watching him. That goal last night, that's special. That's
incredibly
a special yeah. set of skills.
And I don't need people on Twitter sending me backpack gifts when I mention Braden Point, because I didn't even mention what round he was in. I didn't mention where he was from.
But you kind
He's
of
just
are
a good
now.
Player.
But now
He's
you
just,
are.
I'm just clarifying. Like there was no backpack at all.
It's kind of backpack when you...
Can I not? I can't even talk about Braden Point anymore? Is that
You can
that
talk about Braden Point, but you were
all
doing
right.
so well.
I know.
And then you had to back...
I just am clarifying that to this point, there had not been. Now that I've mentioned it, okay, but you get my point. To the third period, we go still 1-0 Tampa. Oh, dear. It's not our world, Dean.
It's grabbed by Lorenz. He overskates, and it's Colton the other way. Ross Colton from the circle. Shoots. Scores! Ross Colton! 2-0 Tampa!
And this is just Tampa being Tampa. Not only do they have the best goalie in the game and arguably the best defenseman in the game and arguably the best group of forwards in the game, but then they just pull someone up that's, you know, oh, he was playing in the Midwest League and scored 1,000 goals 2 years. Ross Colton, Dean. Ross Colton's world from New Jersey.
Can I get a
yeehaw? Another goal. Huh. That was it. 2-0 your final, 4-1 series win, another shutout from Vasilevsky. See you, Canes.
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Bye-bye.
Yeah, Bolts are on to round 3. They'll face the winner of the Bruins and Islanders. Vasilevsky is simply untouchable when it matters the most to the Bolts. Here's their last 3 series-clinching wins. Dallas in the bubble, game 6, shutout. Florida round 1, game 6, shutout. Last night against Carolina, say it with me,
shutout.
Shutout. Yeah. three shutouts in a row and games to close series. That's
first to ever do it, by the way. I don't know if you mentioned that. I think maybe
tidy.
You did or didn't, but
tidy.
And those are the only three playoff shutouts he has. Are the three series clinching ones in consecutive fashion?
He's now also just a win away from becoming the winningest Russian netminder ever in the playoffs. I believe last night his 41st win.
Curtis Joseph, number one?
Evgeny Nabokov.
Oh, okay.
Outstanding.
That's right. And Vasilevsky just 26, by the way, if you need him.
He doesn't want to leave.
So whatever you
probably going to shatter that thing by next week.
So the lesson that we learn, Ryan, Carey Price, putting on a show.
Mm-hmm.
Vasilevsky, mm-hmm. putting on a show.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a first-round pick, goaltender, clearly the way to go.
Yeah, and Leland Irving's team is rolling too, not to mention Cron and company.
I don't know.
Puke. It's not like they're not there. There's just a lot of swing and miss in there as well. Tampa's through to the semis for the fifth time in 7 years. Five times in the final four in the last 7 years. That is remarkable.
One word. Look out.
Right? Since 2001, Dean, they had some years they were awful in there. Tampa's now won 95 playoff games. Of all the teams remaining in the playoffs, that's second best. Boston has one more at 96. Colorado's got 72. Montreal, 58. Carolina, 53. Islanders, 37. Vegas already has 32 playoff wins, which is wild. It's their fourth year in the league. They have 32 playoff wins.
It's special. I know. It's special. Every time you have the conversation, it's so hard to win, and only one team wins, and it's difficult. And then mm-hmm. you flip the coin. It's like, well, at the same time, you can win some playoff games if you want.
Yeah, you could definitely, you know, look at an expansion team that's pretty much embarrassing 2/3 of the league with how to run a team.
Get in every once in a while and win some rounds. You need 4 wins, I think, to win a round. So yeah, put 6, 7, 8 wins a year together in the playoffs.
Yeah, do it. Yeah. Get to the second round. That's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Chicago and LA, by the way, would have a ton of wins, but we're just talking to active teams in the playoffs.
Yeah,
they had their time in the sun, and I think if you're a Blackhawks or a King fan, yeah, whatever. We got rings, baby. Don't worry about us. Pittsburgh as well would be in the mix. Let's go to that expansion team we're all jealous of, Vegas in Colorado. A huge game for both teams. Knights looking to come home with a chance to seal the series at T-Mobile. The Avs, meanwhile, looking to stay perfect at home. Great start for the Avs.
5 seconds to go in the period. Sam looks up at the clock, holding, shooting. He scores! Leave the puck! Take the cannoli!
Yep.
With 0.8 seconds to go in the first period, it's the Sodfather with his 7th goal of the playoff!
Pick him up, Dean. 7. Holy.
Really working the Sodfather there.
We've heard a little too hard.
So we heard that. You mean to tell me we've heard that 7 times in the last 8 games? That bit from Johnny Big Voice there.
Johnny Big Voice has missed like the full punchline on some of them, but he's referenced it at least. Yeah. Take the puck, leave the cannoli, leave the puck, take the cannoli, whatever. Yeah, sure.
Sod's been great though. 7 in the last 8.
Very, very good.
And that one there, if you didn't see it, it's a complete whiff with 2 seconds left by Fleury.
Yes, he throws his stick, skates to the corner in disgust.
It kind of goes high over his right shoulder. He kind of tries to reach over with his catching hand and misses it. It's a great seeing eye shot, but it's easily stopped. And I wonder if Fleury had just kind of tapped out a little bit there with the clock coming down.
Mm-hmm.
But
that's the thing.
Great players sometimes have a way of saying, "I'll get that one back, boys. Don't worry about me."
Yeah, he would make amends, Dean. Donskoy would make it 2-0. The Knights were in a 2-0 hole after 40. Cue the sweaty palms in Denver, though, because the Golden Knights started to rally.
Well, on it again in front. Tuck to the net. Scores! Alex Tuck gets the opportunity. He bangs it home, and Vegas is on the board.
Now, do we recognize that guitar riff, the little beat there?
I wasn't really I wasn't listening that close.
Felt like a Rush song or something.
Boys.
Alex Tuck gets the up.
Yeah, I can't
remember. Barracuda? I don't know.
Is that Boys in the Bright White Sports Car? I'm not
sure.
We'll
have to do some homework on that. That would make it 2-1, but Vegas was not done. Third period still.
Landeskog, nifty move. He'll bring it in. Drops it off, and it went off the back skate of Graves. Carlson will turn it back. Vegas with three on the attack. Carlson in front. Scores! Marchessault tips it home. The Golden Knights have tied it.
Whew. This is just, this team's been a wagon since like the second or third period of game two, Dean.
And both of them off awful giveaways. The first one was...
Oh, Graves is just the poster boy today for take care of the puck at the blue line.
Burakovsky on the first goal, on the tuck goal, in his, inside his own blue line. Here to a lesser, it's Landeskog. But yeah, Graves, you'll hear...
Graves it. In overtime. Have a listen. Here we go. OT.
Feeds it back for Graves with a shot. It's blocked. He's got it again. Another one blocked in front. Pacioretty up for Stone. He's got room. Mark Stone scores! Mark Stone, overtime winner!
Wow. Colorado's first home loss of the playoffs. Their first home loss since March 27th. And Vegas can go back to that insane building, T-Mobile, to move on with a win in Game 6. Colorado will have to win on the road to bring it back to a Game 7. Can we make it a best of 11? I don't want this to end.
Again, I can't imagine being in that building in 2 days' time. We've been so starved of sporting experience, live sporting experiences. Can you imagine if that's the first one post-pandemic in Vegas with a chance to move on to the semis? Good night.
I might die. Remember Nashville? Oof. NHL trophy news. The Masterton finalists announced yesterday. Matt Dumba, Oscar Lindblom, and Patrick Marleau are them. It's the player who best exemplifies the qualities of perseverance, sportsmanship, and dedication to hockey. Last year, Bobby Ryan won it. All three nominees never won before. Dumba co-founded the Hockey Diversity Alliance. Lindblom overcame cancer in December and returned to the lineup full-time this year. Marleau beat Gordie Howe's record for most games played all time. I know he's the one you'll be voting for.
The math is hard to argue with, but three pretty good nominees right there.
Marleau, by the way, has played 910 consecutive games. That's something. Wow. Also, we didn't mention it yesterday, but Kevin Hodgson was on with Pat yesterday talking about being nominated for the Willie O'Ree Community Hero Award for his work with Heroes Hockey. Now, Riley, do we have a clip from Kevin from yesterday?
We do.
Let's hammer that thing.
None of us who do this kind of work do it for any kind of recognition, but, you know, I have the real distinct pleasure of counting Willie O'Ree as a friend and having spent lots of time with him and knowing what he went through and knowing the kind of the doors he's opened for a lot of people in hockey and the things that he's done to, you know, I kind of joke and I say, you know, I get excited when my name is on a golf scorecard or a restaurant table with his, but to have it attached to an award with his name on it, I never would have considered that was a possibility. It was pretty mind-blowing to find out.
Go to NHL.com and vote for Kevin and his work that's done at Heroes and Superheroes Hockey. It is an absolutely incredible charity that impacts lives dramatically. He's a great dude.
And I know, yeah, and I know we always say that, oh, make sure you go online and vote. Do go online and vote. It's easy to do because the work, Kevin's very bashful there. He's you know, he's not trying to take any credit. But what he's done for children, not just in Calgary, but across the country, the Heroes Hockey program is phenomenal. And the stories that come from it are tremendous. It would be great if you go and vote for Kevin because he is one of the best. He's so given so I can't even imagine the hours of his time that he has given up for this program and done it willingly and by choice. It'd be awesome to see him get that award.
Just went and voted right now. That took less than 10 seconds. Go do it. NHL.com, and you can find the links to the Willie O'Ree Community Hero Award. Tonight, we got some action, Dino. Boston on Long Island to take on the crowd. Lou Lamoriello, the incredibly lopsided officiating. It is a 3-2 series lead for the Islanders. Game 6, and it will be rocking at Nassau.
Loud noises!
Yeah, I think that's definitely what's going to go on. A win will guarantee at least two more games at the old dump for round 3 and would also punch the Islanders' ticket to round 3. where they would face Tampa Bay. I wonder which coach will whine about officiating the most.
You can't do that.
Oof. It's 5:30 start, Sportsnet West and CBC. Who do you have tonight, Dino?
I think it is going to be Boston.
We both picked Boston. If we didn't, would that change how you feel about
it? I don't care about you care about that stuff and pride and being wrong or right. I just think Boston's going to find a way. That was it's been so close the whole way. Let's get this to 7. And if Pastrnak doesn't hit that post the other night, then you're talking about a different series altogether. So I think Boston finds a way.
Never mind the officials being in on the fix, right?
But you're right. If they do lose, I worry about Cassidy.
Oh yeah, hasn't played well yet, and it's not going to play well.
No, it's not
in the near future anytime. Let us move along. What can I tell you? We've got Blue Jays baseball, huh?
Uh-huh. Poop in my pants.
First of 3 in Chicago against first place White Sox. Danny Jansen joins the 1,000 bodies on the injured list. 10-day IL for him, injured right hamstring. Riley Adams recalled from AAA. MLB debut last night against the White Sox, where it was Southpaw tight pants, Southpaw tight pants, Southpaw tight pants. Pitching for the Jays. Robbie Ray was good. Rodon as well throwing for the White Sox. He's got a no-no this year.
Is that yours? Did you...
I'm very proud of it.
Have
I
you
was
stolen
working very
that?
Hard at it. I was working very hard.
What is
it
again?
On Twitter, Southpaw tight pants.
Southpaw tight pants.
Yeah.
Got it.
You know the song?
Yeah, I'm aware. I'm very aware of it. Yeah, I think.
7:06. If you want me to go to 7:20, we can play the song.
No, it's fine.
I'll just keep moving. Okay. Ray was dialed. Listen to him go here.
I look back at Moncada at second. And again, the 1-2, and a fastball gets him swinging. How about Robbie Ray?
13 Ks on the night. He only allowed a couple runners in the scoring position the whole night. Wow. Chicago, though, they finally did get at least one man around to touch home against Ray.
2-2. Fastball well hit. Right center field. Gone. Andrew Vaughn takes Robbie Ray out to the opposite field, and the White Sox have tied it.
That Veronica Vaughn.
One piece. Ace. I know.
No, you don't.
Fair
enough. Move on. Yep.
Okay, Jays stranding runners like crazy. 1-for-12 with runners in scoring position. That's not what you want to do. To the 8th inning after DeLeese got out of a jam in the 7th. When for some awful reason, long man but not higher leverage reliever Trent Thornton was in the game and promptly loaded the bases. Then came in Carl Edwards Jr., which seems appropriate because he was serving up meat on a plate like he was Carl's Jr. Not good.
Mm-hmm. Curveball hit hard to right field, and this is down in trouble. Grandal in to score. Eaton racing around third right behind him. Garcia slides in to third with a triple.
Ray gave up fewer hits in 6 1/3 than the bullpen did when asked to get 5 outs. That tells you how things went. 6-1, the final.
I just think I'm going to barf.
Blue Jays are now 3 games back of the wild card at 2 games over 500. Tonight, game 2, 6-10, Sportsnet 1, and on these very airwaves, Alek Manoah against Lance Lynn, who's been deadly. God forbid this game is close and they need to go to the bullpen.
No, God! No, God, please, no! No!
No, 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 no.
I see.
No. There were some other games in the majors last night, Dean. I know we've got lots of time, so.
Got all kinds of time.
Shohei Ohtani. Showtime.
So bad. It's so bad.
Showtime.
Hideous.
He crushed one yesterday, Dean. Like, annihilated it.
Oh, I know. The guy's an absolute unicorn. It's unbelievable.
Do we have the audio, Riley? We sent the audio. Let's hear the audio. Something's wrong with you over there today. I don't know what's going on with the audio.
Is there something wrong? Or is it...
Just got to speak up and tell us what's happening over there. Communication, teamwork.
Loading
Let's
it
go.
Here. Sorry, wasn't bolded. Didn't grab it.
It's right below the showtime part.
30-minute or 30-second commercial.
All good.
it.
We'll move along.
No, let's hang out. Later. I mean, why would we?
NBA playoffs. The 76ers even their series with the Hawks at 1. It's a 118-102 win. Jazz take game 1 over the Clippers tonight. Nuggets and Suns, game 2. 1-0 series lead for the Suns already. And, hey, how about this? Denver Nuggets center Nikola Jokic named the MVP. He pretty darn good. First center to win in ages, like 20-plus years. Positions change, Dean, eh?
Back from my day, yeah.
Yeah, well, I know you were a absolute force in the
power
Central
forward
Manitoba Recreational Basketball League.
Yeah. Still talk about me back in St. Rose de Lac.
That's the one.
Yeah,
what
man.
About in the Paw? They talk about you there?
That's north.
Oh, see,
that's up north.
Different
so,
division.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe in the finals. That would be the only time you see them.
Yeah.
Okay. The Canadian men's soccer team was in action yesterday. Big one, Dino.
I love watching my country crush others.
Well, Euro is just days away from kickoff. World Cup qualifying for Qatar 2022 happening in the CONCACAF region yesterday. Canada was good. Let's hear one of the numerous Canadian goals.
David, plenty of time to turn. Plays in Davies. There he is. Alfonso Davies!
Woo. Very exciting. That was the first of four Canadian goals. They beat Suriname 4-0.